Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now, your inside look at local motorsports. Live from Las Vegas, December 1st, 2020. So the first day of the last month of the year. Oh, couldn't get there fast enough, I guess.
Only 24 days to Christmas.
Oh, man.
Thanks.
Is it that time again?
I'm actually looking at more of it's 21 days before the sun starts going the opposite way because the slow horizon sucks driving.
So some of those overthink things.
No, you're right.
Hosting along with myself. We'll start with Matt Esposito. Thanks.
Oh, we're not going to start with the birthday boy?
Yeah. Birthday? When's his birthday? When was your birthday?
Matt Esposito.
He's like, everybody.
How you guys doing?
All right. When was your birthday?
Last week.
Oh, well, happy belated birthday.
Saturday.
Was it Saturday?
Yes.
Oh. I thought it was February 29th.
That was last Saturday. But yes, you're right. It is February 29th.
Well, happy belated birthday. Did you do anything special?
Oh, yeah. I did. Yes.
Did you get birthday things?
Most of the day, I stood right next to Mark Allen.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, what a better way to spend the day than with Mark Allison. Speaking of Mark Allison, we get the pleasure of sitting next to him. Appreciate you being here tonight.
And it's not our birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always good to hang out with you guys.
Well, you know, we appreciate you being here. We'll get more into that, because it's good to see you here and alive and kicking. And
well, the visits to the therapist after I hang out with you guys is another thing. But
especially without a lot of racing going on, we need some type of therapy.
Yeah, that's true.
So thanks for being here. Appreciate it. And
thanks for the short notice showing up.
It worked out for me.
Worked out for us, too.
That's right.
So it's all a good thing. So what did I miss Saturday? There's some racing going somewhere, I guess,
yes,
right?
Somewhere else.
A couple
different
places, I know.
Havasu had some. I think it was their highest car count ever. If it wasn't, it was real close.
Really? Now, usually, you didn't race.
No.
But we'll get into some of that. But typically, you would be racing that race.
Yeah.
Late model race there. So.
Yeah. At the end of last year, that little late model I've got, it came off the How Jig in 1996.
Wow.
It's 26 years old. The body was updated in 08, so it's just an old car. It wasn't competitive. And at the end of last year, the last race I ran, I qualified 7th, I started 7th, and I finished 7th.
Hey, 777, that's all you give.
I ran 100 laps by myself, didn't pass anyone, no one passed me.
Just got all alone.
Yeah, like, I'm not doing this. It wasn't fun. And I raced
to me, that would be fun because I got 100 laps.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a lot of passing and action going on.
The racing in all the classes was pretty good. They had, I want to say, 17 late models.
Wow.
I think 14 modifieds.
And I thought I saw 17 street stocks.
Yeah.
Where did they all come from? I mean, I don't know 17 street stocks around Havasu. Is there?
I don't know where they all came from.
Because, normally.
I think it's just the Southwest in general. As far as I know, they're not racing at the Orange Show. There's a lot of tracks that aren't racing.
Right.
I know in the mini stocks, some of the dirt guys came over and were running.
I was looking on race monitors, seeing that they had pony stocks.
Yeah.
I guess, so probably some guys
from
Orange.
And as you know, most of them guys are
if it's a Pinto, they're from
Orange Show.
Riverside, yeah. That's where all the Pinos are.
That's
if you look
right.
for a Pino, go to Orange, somewhere on Orange Show.
Yeah, so I'm sure everybody was tired of being locked down, whatever you want to call
right.
it. And, hey, here's a chance to go race. And he even had a fairly decent crowd.
Oh, yeah.
And the racing was good. I don't think anybody got really tore up.
So they actually had spectators?
Yeah,
too?
They had spectators.
So what are the, do you know what the restrictions are there? Are they allowed, like, I don't know?
It looked like they were, to me, I didn't go to the grandstands, but they were kind of spread out. You know, there was plenty of room to keep people distant. Most of the racers kept the social distancing thing going on. Right. So
did you guys go in the pit?
Yeah,
no,
okay.
We were only in the pits. We wasn't
in the stand side. So do you know if they limited like 10 per, you know, a pit area or five?
I didn't hear or see anything about that. Okay. But the pits were full. It's the fullest I've ever seen them.
But they were. But just to let you know, Hauser probably was following the guidelines that were given to them to get the approval.
Yeah.
So, and they did, you know, obviously work hard to get these approvals, and they're, you know, and I'm not speaking for them, but I know that they're not trying to put on races too far in advance because they don't know. It's you know, one or two races at a time that they can get approvals for, and then they'll put those shows on and then go forward, you know, with the next one or two and so on. So. Keep checking in at Havasu95speedway.com, you know, for that. But cool. Well, I'm glad they had a great spectator, great show.
Yeah, I went just more out of curiosity
to
see, knowing that Vegas wasn't running and some of the other tracks around this area weren't running. I kind of had a feeling he'd have a good turnout. He did. And he had some good racing, so it was a good day. Really was.
Cautions, you know, they had
a few here and there for
normal
spun cars.
Normal amount.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing a tow truck tow anybody off in any class.
That's good for that many vehicles.
Yeah.
What all divisions did they run? Do you know?
Late models, modifieds, whatever they call them,
factory
stocks.
Oh, wow.
And then the little mini stock cars.
Oh, yeah. Really? That's cool.
Yeah. I know I talked to Bill. As I was leaving the track that night, or that evening, it was. He was real happy. He was happy with the show, the fans, the car count. And you know how racers, sometimes they have a bad day and there's a lot of bitching and moaning. None of that. Everybody was happy. Their cars were in one piece and had a good day. The weather was good. That's always good, you know.
No kidding. Well, cool. That's good. It all came together. And, you know, I think, I don't know if you haven't been to Havasu, you need to check it out, but behind the scenes, Bill and Bobby and his whole crew, staff and all that, they run a good show there. And if they're running a good, clean show, then it kind of resonates out to the racers and the teams also. And
Plus, just keeping something going.
Right.
It's just nice to be able to keep the racing going.
Well, you think they, you know, being locked up or something, that they want to go out there and get rid of some aggravation and some adrenaline that was pent up, you know, but that's good to see that you know, they had some good races going on. Well, did the late model race go kind of the way you thought it would? Or, I mean, did you recognize most of the names in there?
There was quite a few cars, I want to say, from Vegas. There was some on-show cars and the usual variety of cars from all around. And it was a good race. The 36 car? He kind of checked out a little bit. He had him covered. The modified race is pretty good. Jax won that.
Sam Kuhl. Sam Kuhl.
Yeah.
Was it pretty much the 602 mod?
Yes. That's what it. There were, I think, mostly Vegas cars in that field.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was a pretty good race. I think they had a couple of yellows for people spinning, but by and large, it was a good race. Eddie Seacourse gave him a run for his money, made a couple of charges at him, but. You know, Doug Hamm was up there.
Oh yeah, like
as usual. But yeah, it was a good car count in all the classes and good racing.
It's tough being on the sidelines looking, especially in a couple of divisions that you're real familiar with, the modifieds and the late models, especially down there at the 100 lap races. You must have been kind of, you know, itching to do something, huh?
Well, I've got Greg's modified in my shop, and it's a 602 car.
Sweet.
We've been setting it up to run at Kern, and Kern's rules are a little bigger, different from Vegas. It has to be a sealed motor. It has to run a 9-inch Ford with a mini spool. It has to run a production transmission. You know, there's no bump stops. You have to run.
And you're talking the Kern at the half mile, the asphalt. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had a modified division.
Yeah. They're it's a really economy division because.
No bumps, you said?
No bump stops.
Oh, okay.
And they even tell you that it's an AFCO $90 shock. This is the shock.
Do you like that rule package? I mean, does it make sense to
you? Yeah, it makes sense because it's going to keep the cost down because there's guys spending over $1,000 a shock.
Right.
And then with the bump package, but the bump package also takes a knowledgeable person to go with it. A lot of guys are paying people to set up their bumps and stuff like that. When it's conventional,
here's it more into the each team's hands.
Yeah,
more
here's
so
the springs and here's the shocks you got to run. Here's the tires. Right. You know, kind of like spec racing. But
how does that translate into that big half mile fast track versus if you had bumps and so
well,
on?
Well, the thing that keeps the cars reasonably slowed down there is the crate motor and the 8-inch tire.
Because obviously with the crate, you're limited on RPMs you can turn.
Yeah, they have a gear roll.
Oh, they do have it. Okay,
have
so that
roll.
Makes a huge difference, too. What is do you know what that gear roll is? Is it
471.
471, okay.
Yeah. One of the people don't realize one of the bad things about a crate motor rule, they say, oh, that's going to cure it. It takes away the $10,000-$20,000 motors when you go to a crate motor. But then you turn right around and you'll buy... I've seen them super lightweight transmissions run as high as $9,000.
Right.
I know guys that have paid that.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden your rear end gears and all the rear end assembly, anything that rotates. So yeah, you're only spending $4,000 for a crate motor, but you're spending $15,000 worth of lightweight tricks parts on the car. So
is that allowed in the rules? Is that a gray area? Because somebody's got 10 grand, they're like, well, I can't spend it here, but I want to spend it over here. Some titanium bolts and hollowed out, you know, bolts or, you know, titanium nuts and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I mean, you're going to spend it somewhere, I guess.
So the way Kern's rules are, they take all that away. You have to run a 9-inch board. You can't lighten the gear, and you have to run a mini spool. You can't run a lightweight spool. You know, they pretty much dictate.
Okay.
You have to run a steel driveline. You have to run a production transmission. You can't buy one of them lightweight trick transmissions. You know, you have to run a
production transmission. You're saying, like, let's say,
old Muncie four-speed.
It has to have two working gears.
Yeah,
using
two forward gears.
One
for a half-mile track, it's hard on the clutch if you don't have
at
least two. So you should have three or
three.
Three or a lot
even
of experience.
With the 471 gear.
Yeah, the 471 gear with a two-speed.
Still pushing it a little bit.
You don't want to slip it. The 7 1/4, you know, racing clutches, they don't like to be slipped.
Right.
They die real fast if you do that to them.
Interesting.
So
that's cool. So
that's what
we've
been working on. I'm down to, I got to put the gear, I got the gear and the jig putting it together for it, and Greg brought over the spacer plate that goes under the carburetor and a few little things like that. So we'll see what happens next year.
Cool. Well, hopefully, I mean, it's, again, just when you think, you know, things are looking more open, then they start closing stuff. It's like, come on. It's unpredictable, and that's tough for everyone, whether it's justified or not. It's still happening, you know. So
well, something I had done this year was the Champ Car Series, the endurance racing. I raced a little Mazda at Willow Springs. I got basically 2 hours. Every 2 hours is the maximum the driver can be in the car.
No,
it's an 8-hour race. So yeah,
and that's the big track. You guys did the whole track. At Willow. If you haven't been to Willow, man, that's a really cool historic site.
Yeah, I tell people, if you think how many take Havasu at 15 seconds a lap, how many laps you would get 2 hours in
that
the car.
That is nuts.
So that was fun.
Harry, calm down.
So,
let's get excited over here.
That's a real economical series, that Champ Car series.
Yep.
You get a lot of racing, you know, bang for your buck out of the deal. And road racing kind of equated like dirt track racing. It puts a lot more emphasis in the driver. You know, if you can't drive, you're not going to do well at road racing.
And you're even in the Champ Series, they group you guys in different based off time, I guess. Is that what it is? Or
the more money you spend on your car making it faster,
then
you get handicapped.
Oh, okay.
So if you know, if you just show up with a Toyota with a roll cage in it and race it, you know, you get a break. There's a whole system they had.
Right.
I didn't get too involved in that. I just
but it works because they're always.
Yeah, they sometimes they get, you know, 30, 40 cars.
Right.
And the schedule they had this last year, they ran that Chuck Walla track down on Interstate 10.
Chuck Walla, yeah.
Sears Point, Laguna Seca. I think Button Willow was one of them.
Yeah, probably Button Willow. And Willow, of course.
And Willow Springs. And I think there's a track over in Utah that they run too.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I want to go to Laguna Seca.
Oh, yeah. another track that you probably must visit.
Yeah. I ran Sears Point. I ran the old Riverside.
No kidding. Yeah.
Now I've got Willow Springs. I've run the, you know, I've run the little oval track at Willow Springs,
but not
the road course.
That's cool. So what do you think of that? I mean, how many drivers did you have to change with just one?
The guy I was with, it was just me and him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was interesting. I've been to Willow Springs. I've won races on the little oval. I'd only been to the road course one time and watched a race.
Right.
So I get there, I don't get no practice. So I drove the car around the pit area just to get a feel of the brakes and stuff. And my friend Mike, he took the first stint. So he got three pace ups to kind of look at the track. I'm looking at my phone at Google Earth.
Right, trying to see how that's smart. Yeah,
you can figure this thing out.
Left, right.
Right. So when I jumped in the car and took off, it was like, it was green flag racing. You come out of the pit, in the pit road and go into turn one, that was like, hang on. It took some time to get used to it, you know, my shifting points, braking points.
Right.
I used a strategy that I learned from Joe Ruttman. That's going back a long ways at Riverside.
Back, right.
Instead of trying to do the, you know, downshift like you see the stock car guys do it and say, Sears Point going into turn 11, they try to downshift. If they get wheel hop, they usually spin out. Ruttman taught me at Riverside, like going into turn 9 and turn 2, just drive it in there like a short track car, like you're used to.
Wow.
Brake, and then when you get down into the middle of the corner, where you just before you go to pick up the gas, just drop it down in the gear you're going to leave. So I'd pass them guys like crazy going into the corner.
Where is this guy?
Yeah, they're over there downshifting, railing in there, and they're like, he's not going to make this. I'd get to the apex of the corner, downshift, and off I'd go.
Cool.
So it worked out for me, but when it was all said and done, they were surprised at my lap times, how fast I got. I was pretty fast.
Like, wow.
You can drive a race
like,
car.
Like, who is this guy? Right? Where's he coming from?
But like, it was actually fun. I mean, 2 hours of seat time consistent
that's
like
long.
That. You talk about in a road course, getting your rhythm and your timing and your shifting and your brake points. It's not like an oval track where you've got two entry turns and two exit turns, you know. No,
you got it. I mean, I don't know how many turns they got there. And it's such a big track. By the time you get back around, you're like, okay, what did I do here last time?
And the turns are, every turn is unique to itself. The wide sweeping turns are almost multiple turns.
And they get up on that hill, too.
Yeah,
on that
track. Uphill little corkscrew thing. It was fun.
That's
it was
cool.
It was almost the same reaction like when Kyle Busch ran the Rolex. He got out of the car and went, wow. Like, this is a different than, you know, and it was an endurance. And, like, you know, they throw him in at 2:30 in the morning and they're like, go. And he's like,
okay.
So you're driving at night. He says, driving at night, you're a little bit fatigued because you're off your sleep schedule. And then, like, these guys are just going. Like, you're going.
Did it seem like too long, or was it just enough?
No, you could. The maximum is 2 hours. They won't let you go around 2 hours.
You can maximum. Two.
Yeah,
okay.
You can.
Okay.
What it comes down to, how we did our strategy was based on fuel mileage. We could go about 2 hours, and then we'd have to stop for fuel. So it just kind of worked out. If you're going to have to stop, and to keep the pit stops where they're fair, when you pull into the pits. When your car stops, they put an egg timer on the roof of your car.
Oh, no way.
You have 5 minutes.
That's cool.
You have 5 minutes to fuel it and change drivers, whatever you want to do.
Huh.
When you pull to the end of the thing, if there's still time left, they hold you to your 5 minutes.
So you have to take that 5 minutes.
You have to take the 5 minutes.
Wow.
So it kind of takes having to have an elaborate pit stop or any of that stuff out of the game. So,
interesting.
You know,
that's cool.
That worked out pretty good because we could fuel the car and change drivers and everything.
Yeah, like waiting. Like, all right, we got 2 minutes left. What do we do? Go have breakfast.
Cool.
But I would tell anybody, if you get a chance to do that, you should jump on that.
Is that something you're contemplating doing again?
Oh, I'm going to do it again.
For sure. That's a good question, by the way.
Okay, on wheels now, race car. Let's do it.
Yeah.
When's that coming up?
I haven't seen the schedule for 2021 yet.
But they're typically coming out probably soon, I would hope.
I'm kind of looking forward to it. I want to go. Like I said, I've been to Sears Point. I've raced there before in a tour car. But Laguna Seca is the one that's like, that's
well, you know, then those type of divisions, you know, that's supposed to put the fun back into it, not make it a dollar sport, you know, like anywhere else. Same thing with skid plates or bombers in the oval track world is, you know, how it gets when you get up in the modifieds and the late models and super late models, it becomes a job almost.
Yeah. Well, they had a variety of cars. They had some, like BMW type factory race car looking things. They had this one BMW had a big tall sport. It was a road race car, you know.
Right.
He was faster than everybody else, but it's funny, he flew off the track a couple of times. You're like, wow, there he is off in the dirt again. But you have a variety of cars, and with the endurance racing, you've got cars that you're faster than, cars that are going to go blowing by you that are faster than you. So it's kind of fun. And the cars, the two BMW, like factory cars or whatever they were, and the BMW with the big spoiler, they didn't win. Brian, the little Honda won.
No way.
He was fast. He was consistent. And, you know, they knew. And they had their tires figured out. When I looked at the car after the race, his tires were down to the cords. They slammed on no pit stop. So you can put softer, faster racing tires on there, but you're probably going to have to change them.
Yeah.
We had a tire that went the whole race. We knew we weren't going to.
Right.
Yeah, you could have put a faster tire on, but we didn't want to get into doing all that. We just wanted to go race around the track and have fun. And it was pretty cool. But yeah, the guys with the little Honda, they were fast, and they were real consistent, and they minimized their stops and everything. So they knew what they'd been doing it for a while.
Well, it's like anything else like that. You know, you learn. You know, like next time you go out, you've learned something this last time, and you're going to change this, and this. You get, you know, you got a competitiveness in you that doesn't go away. That's all of us here, I guess. But
well, plus you have your other driver or drivers, because I think you're allowed up to four.
You can have, I think, up to four, but there's only the two of us.
Who is the other person?
Mike Maymer. He's a friend of mine.
Has he experienced race in that world, I guess?
That was kind of new to him. Most of his experience came from motorcycle racing, motorcycle road
so
racing.
So he's familiar with competitiveness and being competitive.
Yeah.
But,
no, Mike's a competitor.
Okay.
I met him back in the days of Doc Faustina, and that's how I met him. You know, the old Mason Moran, Craig Road Speedway days. I've known Mike at least 30 years, I think.
Wow.
So, yeah, when he came to me with this deal to run this road course thing, I'm like, yeah, I'll try that. That looks fun. Yeah,
we got a new thing to get to shoot for now.
Yeah.
We'll have to look at the schedule.
Come on, put one of the trucks up there.
You could. You could run a truck.
Right.
You can run. It's a kind of a run what you bring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you'll get handicapped for, and I think they handicap you laps. If I remember right, you know, if you bring a full-on blown race car that you're going to lap the field, you may get handicapped, you know, 10 or 15 laps. Well, in an 8-hour race, you may not make all that up.
Right.
So you still may not win. And then the faster cars, they have to pit more because they use more fuel. So they kind of handicap themselves. It's the hare and the tortoise, you know. The tortoise is just slow, consistent.
Yeah, just keep, yep.
He's there.
Hitting the checkpoints and keep them going and. Yeah, that's funny. No, that's cool. We'll have to keep an eye out for that. And maybe
it's called the Champ Car Series.
Yeah, well, I've heard of it. It's been around a long time.
My understanding, I'm not real familiar with this. I could be off, but it was an offshoot from that Lucky Dog series.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they think they're kind of the same series. They basically, you know, you take a car, any car you want to take. I mean, you could take your bombers and race them.
Right.
Well, if you think they could go.
Yeah, if you think it lasts for more than 30 minutes.
So you raced 2 hours, then he raced 2 hours, and then you raced 2 hours again, back and forth?
He got into his second stint, and something went wrong with the motor.
Oh.
So I didn't get my second stint in the car. But it didn't break my heart any. And the other thing is they ran Saturday and Sunday both.
Wow.
They ran, so you could run 16 hours. So,
but yeah, you have your 2-hour limit,
crazy.
And depending on how many drivers you got.
Yeah.
So like you said, you could bring 4 and each you get
two hours.
Or you could bring 2 and each of you bounce back and forth, or you could do 3. And you can even drive a half an hour if you're not comfortable, you're not feeling good, or you know something's wrong with the car, you're like, I can't do this. You could pull in half an hour, and then the next driver can take
up. You can change drivers as many times as you want, but every time you come in the pit, you have to stay for five minutes.
Oh,
so there's kind of a – I mean, if you're just having fun, and you wait, run it for an hour and switch drivers, you know. And if you got 4 or 5 guys, everybody gets a chance to play. You know, think about a short track like Havasu. How many laps at a 15-second lap do you have to run to get an hour of speed time?
That's a lot of – that would, to me, seem long. That's why I was asking, did it feel long? Because even on let's say, any track, even Havasu, 30 laps, I'm like, man, when's this thing getting over? But I'm getting tired here.
And you're just turning left.
Yeah exactly. Well, you know, between the shifting, so you're busy,
right?
You know, you're braking and you're shifting and all that. But like this car didn't handle really good. It was a handful. So there was times when, you know, muffling the thing around, your hands start to get numb, so you'd switch hands and you're doing everything
doing what you can to stay comfortable. Like that's pretty cool. Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye out for that. So good change from the circle track.
Yeah.
So. I know they have that other ones, but the Lemons race, it's similar. It's the champ, except I guess they do more like you can do crazy. Like,
yeah, the Lemon thing is where you just bring a clunker out.
And they limit. But it's the same concept.
It's pretty much a skid plate.
Yeah
pretty much. With wheels.
Well, I'd like to see whether a skid plate with just the 2 front wheels.
If you do a road course with a skid plate, I think that would be fun.
Oh. It would take you 2 hours to get around the track.
Right. I can picture it.
Well, I could see something where you throw like a 10,000 to win skid plate race on a road course.
Finish one lap. That's all.
Maybe,
you gotta do.
But I mean, if you look at like, you know, Cindy does really good. You know, Dennis is doing really good. You know, there's some.
You just say no practice. You get one lap. You gotta make it one lap. I don't know. That'd be cool. It'd be different. So. Anyway,
yeah, we'd lose against the Irwindale people though, because the Irwindale skid plates they run on the inside, so they're more flat. We're so used to the bank curves that us going to flat would, I think, be a little harder to adapt.
Yeah, I mean it's
they're already used to flat,
right?
Go and
so
they have
the
a chicane
track
in there
mm-hmm.
usually too, so they're used to the.
Well,
left, right.
That's your own fault. You're not racing down in Irwindale. See? There's racing
advantages.
Exactly. You got to learn their tactics. Oh, well. So what I'm missing, Havasu, Gary, I mean, you said you stood next to Mark most of the time. And were you guys like, hey, look at that guy. That a-hole bumping this other guy.
No, Arlie was down there.
Oh, cool. Anybody you know racing the factory stocks or street stocks?
Billy ran my car in the factory stocks.
Billy Grasser? No way. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. There was 16 cars.
Really? Wow. That's good.
He made it to 4th.
Oh, wow.
Dropped down to 5th, and then the fan belt decided to.
You didn't change the fan belt from sitting
in
that hotel?
Oh, no, it was a brand new fan belt.
I just had to give him a hard time.
And it actually was a brand new motor.
Oh, okay. I know you had a piston issue or something, didn't you?
Right,
a valve issue.
But Billy put another motor in.
Oh, he put that. His other motor. I know which motor you're talking about.
Motor in it. And he went and ran. He did
cool.
He did real good for, not knowing what the motor was going to do. And then,
I know
the fan belt.
He had that rebuilt, but it's sitting.
We figured it out for 5 years.
Yeah. Has it been that long?
Yes.
I guess, you know what? It's funny because it's been that long because the guy that was supposed to build a motor for me at the time I was putting together a hobby stuff, whatever they call them out at Vegas, the
Superstock.
I had dropped my motor off, and he was just getting done with Billy's motor. So it's been 5 years. This guy was supposed to get my motor done about 4.5 years ago.
And so, a couple long nights last week and got it going.
Got it going.
He went down there, ran it, did good until the fan belt.
Right.
You know, but that's part of racing. So.
We didn't wreck it. Didn't you, nothing nope. like that.
Okay.
We were waiting, or I was waiting.
Some close moments.
Oh, yeah. There was a couple.
Because well, Billy's an aggressive driver, but he knows what he's doing. Uh-huh. He's keeping under control, but he seems more kind of aggressive, I think. So.
Yeah, he did real good. Like I say, yeah. He made it to fourth. And I thought he was going to go a little bit further, but...
Were there any other...
And by the way, Jacob Quintero won that
oh,
race.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh,
cool.
That's
nice.
Yeah, I know we're on the radio, but that's
a
picture.
That's
it's a Mazda...
Arx 7, right? Or 8. Arx 8, that's what it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Okay.
It's a kind of peppy little car.
Yeah, that's a rotary.
Yeah.
They got the. I think that one has a 13B in it. That's a nice car.
Cool. Yeah. It ran pretty good.
Yeah,
I was
those are good. They actually can line up pretty decent on the RPMs and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it surprised me how much power that little thing had. It was a couple times I had it sideways.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird.
Nice. Yeah, what better car keeping our control? Those are pretty good.
Cool.
Okay, we'll have to, leave it up to you to post some pictures or something like that at some point, maybe. Or
yeah, no,
whatever.
If we send the pictures over, I'll put them up.
But. I guess, what's the next thing? Are you waiting for a track to open somewhere to race?
Yeah, I'm just trying to cruise mode. I mean, between my late model, the dirt car, and that road race car, I only ran 8 races this year.
Well, that's about 8 races
more than
everybody else.
Yeah. Usually,
that's not more than I've watched.
Yeah.
That's just one.
All right, it competed in. Right?
Yeah, usually, I've been tapering off somewhere between 24 to 30 races a year.
Wow.
I mean, back in my day, I ran, my record is 72 races in 1 year.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
From 2000 to about 2009, I was averaging almost 60 races a year.
Wow.
I mean, every weekend we were running that dirt car somewhere.
Well, I know you guys were...
2 nights a week, all that stuff.
I mean, you're traveling the country, basically,
yeah.
Right?
From, I tell people, as far... Northeast is Alma, Washington, as far east as Batesville, Arkansas.
That's cool. I wish we could all take 6 months off of going. But you guys would make it sometimes a weekend type trip, go out and come back.
Yeah.
Or a few extra days.
Some of the longer
like
trips, Dan would take the car and I'd fly up and then race
crazy.
It because,
wow.
As you know, racing isn't cheap.
Yeah,
so to keep funding the thing, I had to keep working. So it worked out, but. The company I worked for at the time gave me the time off to go race. And if you're running your racing like a business, if you can make it pay for itself, if it can break even, you've done very well.
And Dan, he kind of had a lot of that already figured out, like, where you needed, where you could finish and all that and still be okay and
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah. And I've always been a conservative driver, I'm not going to tear a car up if I'm struggling back fifth or sixth place. Okay, that's what we got.
Right.
I'm not going to crash my car for one position.
You're not gaining anything by getting one or two spots out in where Oklahoma or something like that, even in the IMC rules. Or you guys ran that other series, too.
We ran the Barnett series
for
a couple
series,
of years, too.
I couldn't think of the name, but the Barnett series. Okay. Now, to me, that's where the fun is in traveling, going to different tracks. And, it's fun racing locally, too, but, to get out there and to visit these different tracks. But obviously this year has been unique in a lot of different ways for all of us. Do you mind talking about your experience this year with what you went through and kind of probably hindered some of your late racing so far? If you haven't known, if it's okay to talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're showing some scars. So what happened was, and I misspoke when I was talking about somebody else, that you had a heart attack, but you didn't have a heart attack.
No.
You were...
It was something I was born with.
Right.
And what
months did this... Did you discover this, I guess?
Where are we at?
I know it's December, so a few months ago, a couple months ago, maybe?
Yeah, it's been about 2 months ago.
2 months.
I just had a weird pain in my upper chest and shoulders, mm-hmm. and... I could tell people I've had this body 62 years. I knew something wasn't right.
Right.
I went to the doctor and they ran a bunch of tests. And he said, you've got small arteries, something it's inherent you were born with. He said, I was lucky that I did take care of myself. I ate relatively healthy. Right. I'm not obese. I don't have any real bad problems. I don't drink. I don't smoke. He said, had I lived a bad life, he says, 10 or 15 years ago, you'd have been in trouble.
Wow.
So he said, we're going to open you up. And
Did they try to do stents or something
for
you?
No, he said
well, they knew the arteries.
With the testing they run, he said no stents. He said they do what they call a low evasive surgery. They go in, the old days where they talk about
opening your chest. Yeah, and that's what's scary when you hear bypass surgery.
No, they don't do that.
Now they do it like three holes.
But that's what you had is bypass surgery.
Yeah. He told me before I went in, he said, if your valves are bad, we're going to change them. If any arteries need to bypass, however many they need, we're going to bypass them. And he says, if your heart isn't strong, we'll put a pacemaker in.
Wow.
So when that all done.
And this is planned out before they open you up, of course. So
all the tests they run, the angiogram and all of that stuff you do, the stress testing and everything, they kind of know what they're to expect. They take the small arteries out of your neck, the large arteries out of your leg. And he said, well, one of my small arteries was where the problem was. It was plugged up. But the other three big ones and the other two little ones were starting to get plugged. He said, we fixed them all. And I feel as good, if not better, than I did.
Well, you definitely feel a difference.
Oh, yeah. I equated it, sometimes I come home from work and I'd be tired and I'd lay down and take a nap for a while. I just thought, okay, I'm getting old. I'm 62. I'm running out of energy.
Some of us worry. We're like, man, we feel like that now. We get home, we're like, oh, man, I'm tired.
I've always been active all my life. I mean, I've worked in the construction industry and I just, I go home and work in the shop on the race cars. I mean, there's four cars sitting in my shop right now.
You're definitely a busy racer.
So I just thought it was, okay, this is getting old. I'm going to cut back and all that. And when I talked to my cardiologist and he told me everything that was going on, he said, that's part of the problem. So, I feel great. I am looking forward to getting back into racing. If it wasn't for my girlfriend, I'd be racing already. She rides
her. Girlfriend too. So
she knows I'm itching to go back.
Are you thinking of any particular, like you're going to wait a couple months and if it kind of opens up?
My recovery was phenomenal, I want to say.
Sure.
They normally, after the surgery, they usually send you home in 5 to 7 days. Mm-hmm. In 4 days, I went home.
Oh, cool.
I actually got up and walked around the next morning.
Nice.
They said they didn't want you going back to work in anywhere from 6 to 10 weeks.
Wow.
In 6 weeks, I went back to work.
Oh, cool.
I could have went back, but they said light duty
in
5. And I'm like, oh, wait another week and just go back to work.
They go to full duty.
Yeah, so.
Cool.
And doing what I do in construction management, it's not that strenuous.
And once, obviously, time, helps. But when you do get out there and do races, you're fixed. I mean, the surgery, fix those problems and you're good for another 60-something years. So
he told me, the number he gave me, he said, if you don't do anything any different, just do what you've been doing, he says that probably bought you another 20 years.
Wow.
So they talk about your diet, the cholesterol that builds up that causes the problems, and your cardio exercise and things like that. And I had already cut out the sugar 4 years ago. I've lost 20 pounds with this.
Right.
So I feel great. I mean, I really do. It's like I got a tune-up.
Right. Well, and I know, through the grapevine, some people might have heard different things and didn't know what happened, so that's good to
I kind of kept it low-key because I had, on my work side, we had a bunch of proposals going in.
Right.
I was partnering. We were going after the high-speed train to California. They wanted us to run that project. I just had too many things going, and I didn't need people thinking, he can't do the job. Is he going to have a problem?
No, that's probably smart, strategic move, obviously, work-wise.
I didn't even tell anybody in my family till after I was done with the testing.
Right.
There was no sense in telling that I didn't know.
Sense.
I had this weird pain in my chest, and I tell people now, your body.
Yeah.
If you get a weird pain or something's wrong and it don't feel normal, go get it checked out. Don't don't be the tough guy and I'll get over this. Because that was my first thought. I thought, did I do something to strain myself? Right. And then I realized there's no muscles. This isn't no muscles.
Where did you feel that? Was it deep inside or in the arm?
No, right across the top of my chest.
Okay.
And it, as I was at work, mm-hmm. I felt it migrate down my arms, down my shoulders.
Oh.
And by the time I had got to the hospital, I could feel it clear to my hands. I'm like, wow, this is weird.
And you think it's like nerve or something maybe at
I
first.
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
It was something I had never felt before.
Wow.
It wasn't like, oh my God, double me over pain. It was just a weird pain that
different.
I couldn't identify.
Yeah.
And when they took me in and started running the test, he said, and I had already, because I was born with small arteries. It was inherent.
Right.
I was going to have trouble no matter what.
Yeah.
He said, my doctor said, how would I say it? It being an inherent, I was going to have this problem. The pain, it wasn't like I just doubled over in pain, I guess. You know, I guess I'm trying to figure out how to explain
sure.
it, but it wasn't any big deal.
Right.
But when they started running the tests and stuff, and then, you know, he showed me, like on the angiogram, they showed you could see it.
Deal.
You're like, oh, that doesn't look good. But
I think you said you had 100% blockage.
On one of my small arteries. And I didn't realize this. The cardiologist explained to me, everybody's heart's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
The size of your arteries and exactly how they go around the heart, no two hearts are exactly
wow.
the same. So the small arteries, and they do different things. And, you know, they get all technical on that.
Sure.
Like, okay,
so
just
tell me the layman's term, right?
Yeah, just fix it.
Equate it to like racing somehow. Like, are they like big racetracks or small?
So he's no longer a sealed crate motor.
Yeah.
Is what we're
right,
saying.
Yeah. Well, he went from open motor to crate motor. He's got crate motor now, which is okay.
Yeah. But yeah,
that's cool.
I feel great. I'm looking forward to going back racing.
Cool.
I kind of told myself when this happened that I wasn't going to race anymore. And with everything with the COVID and everything, I wasn't going to.
Was that a thought at the moment? Like, obviously, you know,
you don't
want
to go into the hospital.
When
yeah.
something like that happens, you start thinking more, I don't know how you'd put it, you know, like trying to put things in place, maybe more, I don't want to say realistic, but, you know, like, did you think about, hey, maybe I should stop racing, it's, you know, too much adrenaline or anything like that, or I need to focus on my girlfriend, my family, things like that?
My personal life's been kind of pretty much in order.
And racing's your life anyway. That's always been a part of your life regardless.
The whole time going through all the tests at the doctor's office, I never even crossed my mind, like, I'll never race again.
Okay.
I was like, okay, well, when can I?
Right.
And my doctor, my general physician who I've had most of my life, Warren Gwynn is his name, he's an excellent doctor. He puts everything in perspective for me. He tells me, you don't do this and don't do that. This is going to happen. It's real simple.
But luckily, racing wasn't in there. Wasn't it? Don't do that, right? So,
but in the racing side of it, people ask me all the time, well, like, doesn't your adrenaline get going?
You're a calm racer anyways. If you don't or haven't seen Mark race, you got to go check out one of the races. You're probably one of the most relaxed, patient racers I've ever seen.
When the arm's on the roll bar.
That one-handed race, I tell people, it's like sitting at home in the easy chair. I've done it so much. I got to say, when I climbed in that road race car and jumped on a track, I was a new experience.
Okay, this is
okay.
That's cool. That's good. It's just something
you know, testing out the new works.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Not taking anything away from, like, the modified
sure,
or the late
sure.
model, but I have done the late model dirt modified so much.
Right.
When was the last time you see me hot lap a dirt
exactly.
car? I don't do that. I know what it's going to do. I get in and I drive it. And experience has taught me that relax, that old cool, calm, and collect. You know, I don't get tense. I don't get nervous. I just, you know, I just like racers, they'll look at the lineup and go, okay, well, this guy may do this. And this guy, and they're trying to
predict.
I've raced so many times. I've watched the scenario, what you plan in your head, never happens.
Yeah. And that's me, by the way. I look around, okay, this is what's going to happen. And obviously, it never happens that way. It's like, I didn't expect to see that.
Yeah. So, you know, you're just starting by that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. My friend Joe Foray, Joe and I are business partners kind of now. I work with him over at Sigma. One day I told him we were racing on the half mile dirt track, and I said, I knew where you were going. As soon as we entered the turn, he goes, how did you know that? I said, I could see which way your wheels were pointing. He goes, what? I go, yeah, I'm watching you set the car. I'm looking at your front wheels where you're, I know where you're going.
Right.
He goes, how do you have time to do that? Well, I,
that's racing.
You watch the cars around you. But he thought that was amazing that I watched what he was doing so I could tell. I knew where he was going, so I knew where I had to go.
So you knew exactly where you think he was going to end up.
And, yeah.
You know, that's, I was going to say that with your experience, you can, by just being on the track, you almost predict the way the track is, how it's going to turn out in 5 or 10 laps, and obviously what certain drivers out there that you race against, what they're going to do when the track dries up or do whatever it does, you know. So.
Yeah, but we went to a race up north, and Kirk and Glenn went with me, and I told them, I started on the outside, and the third row outside, and I said, the moisture's on the bottom. That's where everybody's going to go. I'm going to stay on the top, and I live by the sword, die by the sword. If the top cleans off and the bottom dries up, I'll be fast. If it doesn't, we're going to struggle. And I dropped back to about 8th or 9th within the first 3 or 4 laps. It looked like, oh, God, this is horrible.
Done,
we're
right.
done. And I stuck with it and stuck with it. And by the halfway point, I took the lead from the outside and drove off and won the race. And like, I can't believe you did that. I said, yeah. You kind of study the track and you figure out where it's going to go. And that's how you can win some of them dirts. And Dan, when Dan was alive, as a crew chief, he'd go look at the car and he'd give me a setup and say, this is how you need to drive this. This is the track's going to come to you. Be patient and you'll get this.
That's crazy.
So I learned that from him. I always got a kick out of pavement guys talking about, oh, the track changes from the sun being on it in the evening and all this. I'm like, no, that track didn't change. So when you go from a tacky, heavy track,
the
rear
track,
throttle down every lap, you know, in the heat race, and you line up in the main event and you swear to God you went ice racing.
Right.
Like, what the heck happened?
That's cool.
And I've won more races by having, I want to say, it's easy to get lulled into a, you know, drive the track this way, the same pattern, same, you're entering the same way. In oval track pavement racing, you do that. You hit your mark. You guys, I got to get my mark.
Yep.
I got to hit the groove and all that.
Yeah.
In dirt, if you can stick to that, you're probably going to lose because the guy that says, this isn't working, that moves up to the top, and all of a sudden he goes by you, you know, 3 car lengths further up the track, and you're like, holy crap, I didn't see that. So you're always looking, and especially on yellows, you'll see guys, the smart guys, they'll go up and they'll try the top mover. They'll tie the ball. They'll
just to feel.
And they're looking to see if it's dry or not. They'll pitch the car in there and feel it and see, hey, oh, there's some grip
right outside the spot. Yeah.
Yeah, you're always hunting. I won numerous races running the top line right up by the wall at one corner and running the bottom on the other corner.
Wow.
You know, it's what it works out. But that ability to adapt to that and see that.
I want to go racing now. Just talking to Mark. You know, I was actually surprised when Chet was in last week, how many races that he got to see. Because I thought during the Corona times, of course, this last year was kind of weird, but a lot of tracks closed, but a lot of race, you know, maybe without spectators for a lot of them, but a lot of tracks stayed open or opened up enough to get some good racing in. I didn't expect that many, but just, you know, pretty cool to see that. And matter of fact, this past weekend, Havasu wasn't the only race track that was racing. I know Tucson had
Tucson
a Saturday
race.
Sunday race. It was their turkey shootout race. And I know there's a couple of Vegas people went there to race. I don't know how they did or anything, but, that's why I was actually surprised that many late models and stuff showed up at Havasu, you know, because they did have, you know,
I think the Tucson race was a super late model race.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's
it wasn't a late model.
Yeah.
That's true. That was a super. They didn't have late model. They had the supers and I think vintage and something else.
Yeah. Speaking of supers and late models, ESRL made an announcement that they're going to add to their series the pro late models.
Late models. Okay.
Which is the crate motor car.
And they're going to use the same rule package for that or similar?
They're going to use, my understanding, they're going to use that pro late model package that Madeira, Irwindale, Havasu, that pro late model series.
Because I know like you had some reservations on that actual pro late model rule package originally, I think, on some of the allowances for the frame modifications and different things like that. originally?
It's down to now. The Pro Late model is basically a tour car with a crate motor in it.
Okay.
The older cars like mine, the crate motor cars get to move the motor a total of 6 inches back in the frame.
Wow,
so they get
nuts.
That helps. On the smaller truck, you have to, having an open motor doesn't help you. You know, the 8-inch tire just doesn't have the grip that the.
And that's the difference, too, is the 8-inch tire versus the 10-inch tire, of course.
Yeah, the biggest difference in the car is the crate motor, the 8-inch tire, and that's about really it, you know, the biggies for that.
Cool.
Where the tour cars can run lighter stuff, more, I want to say, exotic components on them. But the Pro Late models can run just about as much of the lightweight stuff.
Do you think being part of that SRL group costs to race is going to be affordable, even though it is, you know, it's supposed to be an affordable race car of the late model?
The Collins and them over there running the SRL, they've been doing it a long time.
They have,
they
make it work. You know, no matter what they've done, it's worked.
Yeah, they seem to make it work, you know. They, like any series, they've had to make some adjustments, but they've got sponsorship for all the series. Yeah. I know Joe over at Sigma and SPS is sponsoring the Pro Late model series, just like they sponsor the series at Havasu.
I mean, that's what I meant, the Havasu.
Joe's he loves racing. He's stepped up. And
is he going to do any racing?
Yeah, probably. I've been busy and he's been busy. I haven't been in the office a lot and sit down, you know, talk with him. But
we'll talk to him about bumping doors in a truck with you. No. But that'd be nice to see him back out.
Well,
kind of
Joe and I met racing dirt modifieds, and I keep telling him, come take that dirt car of mine and just go play. He gets so intense, and I mean, he's got a heck of a crew of guys working over there at SPS at Sigma Racing, and he just he takes it serious. And I'm like, dude, you need to have some fun sometimes,
right? For yourself, right?
Yeah, just go enjoy it.
No, that's true. Be nice to see him out. I mean, because didn't Joe come in on that was
Joe
a few
years
lunch.
Ago?
That
was
4 or 5 years ago.
It's been a while since Joe's been in. We'll have to get him down here.
Yeah,
sometime.
That'd be cool to have you both come in.
Yeah, he could tell you more about in depth what they've got. They've got a heck of a program over at Sigma. They're actually, cars are coming off the jig. They're racing them. They're competitive.
I know when he bought that building there. I mean, I saw he was starting to set it up originally.
Yeah.
That's a nice open area that he's got.
Oh, yeah, he's got quite all the equipment over there. I mean, there. He's got some extremely talented people over there. Some of the, I would say, best people in the country.
Yeah.
So, and his results show that. I mean,
he has one or two cars in the SRL Spears series racing at all time.
Not all the time. They have a maintenance program where they take people that have cars but don't have the equipment, like, you know, they've got a pull down rig and the shock dyno and gale force machine, so they can help people. Like, I think it's a 25 car that finished fourth at Vegas, Ferguson. That car runs out of their shop. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Molini runs one of their cars. They rent cars too. They have pretty much anything you want to do. You want to race something, they got something for you. I know they were renting some of the Pro Late model cars. They have had a couple of Pro Late model cars.
Cool.
So he's neck deep in race cars and racing over there. So
what a better way to do it, right?
To
be involved with it. If you can do it, that's we'd all do the same thing, you know. In some one way or another, if you love racing, you're going to be in it somehow.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not. But oh well.
Yeah, Joe's, he's just a car guy, and he loves racing. Like I said, I met him 20 years ago racing, and he traveled around with me for a while when we were running the IMC, running for the regional national points. He traveled around and raced with me and Dan.
That's cool.
That's how we met, racing modifieds, and we had some fun together.
Right.
Some adventurous road trips.
We'll have to get him in here. His side of the story now.
Uh-huh. We're only hearing one side.
Yeah,
of the story.
Exactly. Let's hear both sides though.
Yeah, Joe could rat me out.
Well, Gary, make a phone call to the doctor. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool, yeah. Talk to him, see if...
you'll have to get him down here.
Yeah, be cool. I think it'd be fun. Next, we like talking about racing, so what better way than more racing stories? So, I don't know, you know, what... I don't know what's next for, you know, racing in the general area, because, you know, you got shutdowns in California, so you don't know what tracks are going to be able to race or not race. And Arizona, same thing. You just don't know what's, you know, they're racing
well, I think
now.
What's hard now is, do you spend the money or not? Do you?
Well, if you're a racer,
are we going to race next
year? If you're a racer, yes, you spend the money regardless if you're going to race or not. You get ready to race, right? I don't know. But yeah, but that's a good question. Is do you like, spend the money? Do you, you know, I know, you know, we talked about like a lot of guys that you went out and just started doing like buying razors and things like that, just doing, you know, non-competitive things, but that still costs money too.
Right.
A lot, you know, so.
But
I don't
there's
know.
Been cars up for sale, you know, so.
Right.
How many people are just, you know, I can't race. I don't think I'm going to race next year. Right. So I might as well just,
you know,
move on.
Well, you know, I guess, you know, typically this time a year, we start hearing about what's going to be happening in Vegas, you know, at the Bullring for the guys that race locally, but nobody knows. I mean, we I don't want to spread rumors. I know we've all probably heard some of the same things, different things, whether they're going to open or not this year, who knows. But normally by now we hear something, you know, and I know David Stetzer probably has his hands tied. You can't announce something if you don't know what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
So
the only thing I would ask that if the management, you know, like you said, there's rumors floating around.
Yeah.
I've heard everything from
exactly.
They're going to be back to normal when the virus goes away to they're going to bulldoze the place under.
Right.
I would say as an obligation, so to speak, to the racers that have supported that facility for so many years, give them a heads up. You know, why would a guy go out and spend money on a race car and the track he's going to race at closes?
Right.
You know,
and you know, and there's a lot of guys that supported that track, you know, their whole life, you know, that they've been in Vegas, you know, that's raced just as a hobby, and whether they're competitive or not, they constantly go there.
I can show you a picture of my late model at the time. Wayne Jacks had paved the track when he built it for Alex Rodriguez. There was no wall, it was just pavement in the desert. And we're out there racing around that track.
Amazing.
Testing it out.
That's cool.
When there was no wall in there, it just over paved out in the middle of the desert.
We're going to have to spend a day at Mark's house. Go through photo albums.
So talking nostalgia like that, I don't know if you've been by the old Craig Road Speedway. They're finally building a warehouse.
Are they? No, but I always look over when I drive by. I'm like, I wish I was part of that. I mean, you're one of the
I followed the property from when the bank had it.
Yeah.
Just go online. And the Mendenhall family, Las Vegas Paving, had owned, I think it was 54 acres back in that corner.
Wow.
Where the track was. They've left the frontage on Craig Road commercial, so they're not developing that yet, but right where the track set and back further in the desert, it's all big tilt-up industrial warehouses are going up right now. So you can still see what's left of the remnants of where the parking lot was.
No kidding.
Other than that,
the memories are fading. That sucks.
Yeah. I know a couple of what I would call like treasure hunter people. Steve Abbott from owns an ATV place over there on Craig. He went out there and found like a 57 Chevy wheel.
No way.
You know,
that's
kind of rummaging around because people used to just, if something broke, they just threw it off out there in the desert.
Right.
So, there was some like scavenger hunters that went out there and
looked
around and found some interesting stuff there.
Find a Mark Allison name patch.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry about that. That's why I got my Duncan.
If you guys got want to post a bunch of pictures from Craig Road Speedway back in the day, I've got a lot of stuff.
We'll
my brother's got a lot of stuff.
I know. Yeah, you were. I mean, it's been a long time now. Me and Gary put on the Craig Road Speedway reunion. That was one of the best things that I felt to be part of. It was really cool, and I'm glad you helped get some of the people out there that you did, and knew that was just something else.
I still get people asking me, when are they going to do that?
I know, I get asked that. I know Gary probably does too. We've tossed it around, you know. We can't wait too long because there'll be nobody left. Anyway, so you got some cool pictures. We'll have to get some of those Out. Nice.
That's my first win at Quiggy's.
No way.
Look how young I was.
Is that you?
20 years old.
Cool. Anyways, Mark, we're out of time. Obviously, you got to come back. We'll talk some more. We never have enough time with you. So.
Yeah. We'll see if we can't get good at it.
Yeah. I don't know when we're having next Tuesday, but we'll be here live next Tuesday at 6 p.m. And thanks again, Mark. We'll probably have you in a whole month and not have enough to talk about still. So I'm glad you came in back to here so I can help you. We're looking forward to more.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.